fool the media, policymakers, and general public into trusting these sources, despite their corporate-funded PR agenda, Simon said. Industry spin is becoming more prevalent and aggressive. Glyphosate is such a critical moneymaker for the agrochemical industry that there are organizations devoted solely to the chemical. The Glyphosate Task Force, formed in Europe by a consortium of chemical companies including Monsanto, has significant influence as a provider of research data to regulators. It does not seek to appear independent of industry, nor does its counterpart in North America, the Joint Glyphosate Task Force. Still, the depths of their influence on regulators is often murky. When IARC made the glyphosate classification, both organizations decried IARC and sought to direct attention instead to a renewal assessment report, or RAR, produced by the German government in 2013 that concluded glyphosate was unlikely to pose a cancer risk to humans. That RAR recommended that the acceptable daily intake for glyphosate actually be increased by 67% because glyphosate was so safe. And because it was released by a government entity, the RAR appeared authoritative enough to counter IARC's findings. But few knew that RAR actually relied heavily on a dossier put together by the Glyphosate Task Force. Though Monsanto's own work helped direct the findings, the company pointed to the RAR as independent and authoritative backing for glyphosate safety, and the public was none the wiser. A group of six scientists and academic professors penned a letter in April 2017 calling for an end to the spin and the secrecy surrounding Monsanto's herbicide. It is clear from the amount of time, effort, and money that the agrochemical industry has spent on trying to counter efforts to restrict the use of glyphosate that they are quite concerned about lost profits from the sales of these products. Rather than cynically attempting to squeeze the last few dollars of profits from sales of chemicals that have been demonstrated to cause adverse health effects, the agrochemical industry should exert some corporate responsibility and open their concealed testing data regarding the safety of chemicals for public evaluation, the group wrote. Chapter 7. A Poisoned Paradise. The Hawaiian Islands have long been a draw for tourists from around the world. But the year-round climate of warm winds, sunshine, and ample moisture has also made the islands a hotspot for multinational agrochemical and seed companies, which see the tropical environment as an ideal testing ground for a range of new seeds and the chemicals used on them. Corn is the big seed crop in high demand around the globe. And with the introduction of genetic engineering of corn and other seeds in the mid-1990s, has become a broad expansion by the seed and chemical companies across Hawaiian farmland and broad use of glyphosate herbicides. Monsanto Company, Dow AgroSciences, DuPont, Syngenta, and others snapped up leases for large swaths of property over the past several decades and transformed areas known for sugar and pineapple production into experimental field sites. By 2014, the chemical companies controlled more than 13,500 acres on the island of Kauai alone. Across the state, including on the islands of Maui, Molokai, and Oahu, the companies occupied about 25,000 of the state's 280,000 acres of agricultural land. With the year-round intensive crop work have come heavy applications of not just glyphosate, but a range of pesticides, many with dangers that are better documented than those associated with glyphosate. The experiences of island residents illustrate how hard it can be to challenge chemically intensive agriculture and the powerful business interests behind it. In addition to glyphosate, one pesticide of top concern is a bug-killing chemical called chlorpyrifos, which has been banned for residential use in the United States since the year 2000 because of its dangers. It is known to be highly toxic to fish and other aquatic life, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, warns that it can overstimulate the human nervous system and can kill people at very high exposures. Even more worrisome, research by the Columbia Center for Children's Environmental Health found that children who had greater pre- and postnatal exposure to chlorpyrifos were more likely to have altered brain development and experience early childhood developmental delays, lower IQ scores, and a host of serious neurodevelopmental problems. The researcher said the findings suggest that neurotoxic effects of chlorpyrifos are long-term and have important public health implications because of the fact that widespread agricultural use continues unabated. And a review of the scientific literature published in February 2014 in the British journal Lancet Neurology cited chlorpyrifos among several commonly used chemicals that injure the developing brains of children. Still, chlorpyrifos has remained a key tool in agriculture, especially in production of corn, soybeans, fruit, and many types of vegetables, such as broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts. It's been used regularly by the chemical companies on the Hawaiian Islands, and the companies have fought mightily to keep using it despite the research on its dangers to children and others. The EPA proposed in October 2015 revoking all tolerances for chlorpyrifos, essentially banning it for any agricultural use, but only after being sued by environmentalists who argued the chemical is highly dangerous to both people and wildlife. Despite the evidence of harm, Dow and others in the chemical industry protested the EPA moves, and the chemical remains on the market as a restricted-use pesticide, or RUP, as of this writing. Other chemicals used on island test fields include the herbicides atrazine and paraquat, both big sellers for agrochemical giant Syngenta. Studies have linked atrazine to endocrine disruption, miscarriage, birth defects, and cancer, and it has been banned in the European Union since 2003. And even though Switzerland-based Syngenta has been the largest producer of paraquat, the chemical is banned in that country because of links to Parkinson's disease, other neurological disorders, and cancer. Both are still allowed in the United States, though regulators have acknowledged the potential risks. Another pesticide used on the islands is methomyl, introduced by DuPont in 1968, which has similarly been shown to be problematic for humans and animals. The EPA has restricted its use because of the dangers. In fact, at least 7 heavily used pesticides on the island are so dangerous that their use is supposed to be tightly restricted per EPA requirements. More than 906,000 pounds of these RUPs was sold statewide in 2014, according to state data. The state does not collect similar data on general use pesticides, such as glyphosate. For residents of the Hawaiian Islands, the combination of chemicals has formed what many fear is a toxic soup poisoning their piece of paradise. And sadly, there is some evidence their fears could be well-founded. Alongside the climbing chemical use have come a range of reported health problems, including suspected poisoning episodes from spraying of pesticides near schools and homes, and unusual rates of birth defects, cancers, and illnesses reported by medical practitioners. One group of doctors told lawmakers in 2013 that they were seeing more miscarriages than usual, abnormally high rates of very severe gout in otherwise healthy people, high rates of patients with respiratory problems, hormonal changes in patients causing excessive facial and body hair on women, recurring nosebleeds in children, and patients reporting a persistent metallic taste in their mouth. That physician's group from the island of Kauai cited statistics that they said showed birth defects occurring at 10 times the national rate. In a July 2013 letter to lawmakers, the doctors wrote, "We have no direct evidence of a specific correlation between these unique variances in the health of some of our patients with the current or past agricultural practices, but we do have a high level of suspicion that a strong correlation exists between the two. We all share a deep concern for the health of our patients and the concern of what may be happening to our community by being exposed to this unique cocktail of experimental and restricted-use pesticides on an almost daily basis." The fears are most pronounced on Kauai, the oldest of the Hawaiian Islands, and affectionately known by its population of roughly 68,000 as the Garden Isle, for its fertile soil and lush beauty. Kauai boasts emerald valleys, tropical rainforests, cascading waterfalls, and jagged cliffs thousands of feet high. But in recent years, the west side of the island has become known primarily for the intensive agrochemical industry presence there. BASF, Syngenta, DuPont, and Dow have made the land their own, testing an array of new crops and dousing them with a variety of chemicals, including RUPs such as chlorpyrifos and the less restricted glyphosate. Some residents now call the west side of Kauai the Poison Valley and say they must constantly clean their houses of reddish dust and keep windows closed to avoid toxic vapors and chemical odors that waft through neighborhoods on brisk island breezes. Several residents of the town of Waimea sued DuPont over the chemical use and the impact on their homes. A jury awarded the residents $500,000 in 2015, finding that DuPont failed to follow good management practices on its fields. On the other side of Waimea, the fears have focused on work by Syngenta that involves the spraying of pesticides in an area that abuts a middle school, a health clinic, and a veterans hospital. Students at the school were evacuated twice, in 2006 and 2008, and taken to hospitals with flu-like symptoms that many townspeople blamed on the agrochemical companies and their pesticide use. Syngenta contended the odors were caused by stinkweed, not pesticides. A government probe was unable to provide definitive answers as to what harmed the school children, but did find traces of chlorpyrifos and the insecticide, bifenthrin, in air samples at the middle school. Bifenthrin is another RUP and is deemed by the EPA to be a possible human carcinogen. Another alarm bell rang when 10 Syngenta employees were rushed to a local hospital on Kauai in January 2016 after walking onto a field too soon after it had been sprayed with chlorpyrifos. Company management blamed the workers, saying they had strayed into a field where they were not scheduled to work. But the EPA sued Syngenta's Hawaii operation for failing to notify the workers of the danger and ordered the company to pay a fine of $4.9 million. As signs of harm have mounted, worried Kauai residents have pushed to learn exactly how much of the agrochemicals are being used and where. One analysis of government pesticide databases and data from the Hawaii Department of Agriculture, released in 2014, showed that the agrochemical industry was applying pesticides at higher rates on Kauai than the application rates on most U.S. farms. That report described the west side of Kauai as one of the most toxic chemical environments in all of American agriculture. Worried residents have asked for buffer zones between the pesticide spraying and schools and homes. But the pesticide companies disputed the findings of excessive pesticide use and have opposed any efforts that might limit their work. For longtime Kauai doctor Lee Evslin, addressing the pesticide concerns on the island where he and his wife have lived for more than 35 years and raised four children, has become, in his words, an important battle. Evslin was never one to seek out political involvement. He was content to spend his life as a physician with a specialty in caring for children. He first used his medical expertise to establish a neonatal intensive care unit on Guam before moving in 1979 to Kauai, where he built a career that included a private pediatric practice and a 15-year stint as administrator of a local hospital. But the rising concerns and the tactics chosen by the pesticide companies to protect their work on the islands have left him appalled and active in efforts to rein in the pesticide use. Evslin's outrage came after he spent 15 months working with several other doctors and scientists on a joint fact-finding group formed by the state and local governments to gather data on the pesticide concerns. The group was called upon by government leaders to determine if agricultural pesticide usage on Kauai is as dangerous and damaging as critics asserted, or as safe and innocuous as the biotechnology companies claimed. Two representatives from the agrochemical industry, one from Dow and one from DuPont, resigned from the fact-finding group after the draft report was issued. The two complained the report was biased and not based on facts. That group's final report, issued in May 2016, found that the big seed companies applied an estimated 36,240 pounds, or 18.1 tons, of RUPs over a 20-month period, from December 2013 to July 2015. The group also found that the rate of RUP use on the island was generally higher than that on mainland farms, up to 3 times higher. The group said there was not enough information to conclude whether pesticide use by the seed companies played a role in health problems of Kauai residents, however. The group said more research and data were needed to draw firm conclusions about a causal relationship. A separate report by the state found the incidence of cancer on Kauai was generally the same or even lower than for the state overall, and there are conflicting findings on the reports of other diseases as well. But even without definitive causation, evidence of human health problems tied to the pesticide use, Evslin came away more convinced than ever that the pervasiveness of the agrochemicals lays a dangerous path for the future of the island. "It is wrong what they are doing," he said of the pesticide industry's reluctance to make changes that might address concerns. Evslin has specific worries about glyphosate. Given the growing evidence of its ties to cancer and its common and widespread use, which leaves residues in food, water, air, and our bodies. "We all have a level of glyphosate in our bodies at all times," he said. "I can't imagine we were designed to have constant low levels of glyphosate in our bodies. Clearly, glyphosate in our food is not a good thing. The more I get involved in this, the more angry I become." Many Kauai residents also are angry, and the island has become a political and legal battleground between those who want to rein in the pesticide companies and the industry, and its allies who are determined to defend their work, which translates to economic gains for the state through lease income, taxes, and jobs. The citizen uprising, as some describe it, reached a fever pitch in 2013. With efforts to force restrictions on the seed and chemical companies. A 10-page ordinance introduced in June of that year by Kauai County Council member Gary Hooser was seen as a first, though imperfect, step to try to get a handle on the pesticide use. The measure, House Bill 2491, required companies to disclose their pesticide use and the types of genetically engineered crops they were growing, set a 500-foot pesticide-free buffer zone around schools, hospitals, neighborhoods, and bodies of water, and called for a temporary moratorium on the experimental use and commercial production of genetically modified organisms, GMOs, until the county could conduct a health and environmental assessment. It also prohibited open-air testing of experimental pesticides and GMO crops. By August 2013, the bill had become sharply divisive, drawing large crowds to public meetings and pitting people who worried about pesticide-related health and environmental problems against others who worried the restrictions might drive the agrochemical companies off the island, hurting the economy and triggering job losses. An estimated 4,000 island residents staged a march in support of the bill that September before a county council vote, but the bill was watered down in committee meetings, stripped of all but the buffer zones, the assessment, and the disclosure requirements for GMO and pesticide use. Prohibitions on open-air testing of experimental pesticides and crops fell away, and the temporary moratorium was also dropped from the bill. The full council approved the revised bill, then known as Ordinance 960, only to have it vetoed by Kauai's mayor, Bernard Carvalho, who agreed with a pesticide industry argument that it was the state's role to regulate pesticides and GMOs, not the islands, which operates under a county government. The county council disagreed and overrode the mayor's veto in November 2013, but its victory was short-lived because less than 2 months later, Syngenta, DuPont, and a company affiliated with Dow called AgriGenetics sued to block the new law from taking effect. A federal judge agreed with the agrochemical companies in August 2014, saying the county didn't have the authority to regulate the company's actions. But the residents of Kauai would not stop pressing for action. In October of that year, a group of them reached out for help to the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, asking for a public health assessment that would seek to determine if people near the island test fields were in fact being exposed to harmful pesticide levels as suspected, and what impact the pesticide use was having on human health. The petition stated the group's position this way. Great health concerns exist in the community because of the intense agricultural practices utilizing a large amount and variety of pesticides being used in experimental conditions near some communities. Recent environmental studies have identified the existence of these agrochemicals both in the air and the open waterways near where people live, work, and go to school. In addition, anecdotal evidence indicates that the community may be experiencing some adverse and an abnormally high number of health issues that may be attributable to the chemicals being used. Ileana Arias, head of the CDC's Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, ATSDR, denied the request, saying such an investigation would be challenging. She said the ATSDR had reviewed available data on a range of relevant topics and found the data either lacking or indicative of no association between health problems and pesticide residues. She acknowledged there was no information available about the amount of general use pesticides applied, such as glyphosate, and acknowledged that companies appeared to be applying 1 to 3 times the amount of RUPs per acre on Kauai than on corn acreage on the U.S. mainland. But even though the data points suggest Kauai residents might be exposed to more pesticides than U.S. mainland populations, Arias said if other factors are taken into account, such as weather and varying times and locations of applications, the opportunity for residents of Kauai West Side communities to be exposed to pesticides is probably no different from the U.S. mainland. She also said existing cancer data did not warrant concern, nor did existing research on birth defects. Only a few published articles supported an association between pesticide exposure and an increased rate of birth defects, including those of concern on Kauai, and many of those studies were not very robust and had significant limitations. Arias summed up her decision this way. ATSDR is not able to demonstrate scientifically whether people near agricultural fields in Kauai, West Side communities, are being exposed to pesticides at levels of health concern. Accordingly, ATSDR will not conduct any additional public health assessment activities specifically about the pesticide use on the crop fields at Kauai, Hawaii. The agency did say it would work with the Hawaii Department of Health to provide the local professional healthcare community with an opportunity to learn more about environmental contaminants and their potential health impacts. Even as the Kauai effort was floundering, a burgeoning citizens' movement was mounting on the island of Maui to try to rein in Monsanto and Dow, which both had research farms on the island. Monsanto at the time was employing about 365 people on 3,000 acres it owned or leased within Maui County, while a Dow unit had about 100 workers on about 420 acres. Concerned Maui County residents had taken photos and submitted evidence to state regulators that they said showed glyphosate being sprayed frequently in areas near school children and along commonly traveled public roads and pathways. Shortly after the law in Kauai was overturned, voters in Maui approved a moratorium on the cultivation of genetically engineered crops until scientific studies were conducted on their safety and benefits. But 1 week after the measure passed, in November 2014, Monsanto and Dow filed suit to block the law and invalidate the voter-approved measure. Again, the companies found victory through the courts. If effective, the referendum will have significant negative consequences for the local economy, Hawaii agriculture, and our businesses on the island, Monsanto said in a statement issued when the lawsuit was filed. Residents on the Big Island of Hawaii had a similar experience, pursuing an ordinance in 2013 that would restrict the seed company's ability to operate, only to see the effort fail in the face of corporate opposition. Mark Philipson, an executive of the Swiss seed and agrochemical company Syngenta, explained why being able to work on the Hawaiian Islands is so important to the industry. Almost any corn seed sold in the U.S. touches Hawaii somewhere, he told the New York Times. The companies have seen strong support from many who say the seed business is vital to the economy, contributing more than $200 million and thousands of jobs. The Hawaii Crop Improvement Association, which acts as a trade association for the seed and chemical companies, disputes that there is any credible statistical health information to support claims of birth defects and other health problems tied to the pesticide use. Nevertheless, people are still scared, both about pesticide use generally and about glyphosate in particular. On the main island, the Hawaii State Senate held a hearing in March 2014 to examine glyphosate use and possible dangers. The prevalence of the pesticide was underscored by a study conducted by the state's health and agriculture departments with help from the U.S. Geological Survey. The study sampled 7 streambed sites around the state and found glyphosate residues in every one. Atrazine was also commonly found statewide. In all, researchers found that surface water samples collected from 24 sites around the islands showed at least one pesticide in every location. A year later, in 2015, the Hawaii County Council took up a bill to ban the spraying of glyphosate and other pesticides on government grounds. The bill's sponsor, Kohala Councilmember Margaret Will, said that concerns about Roundup needed to be addressed. The bill's goal was to decrease the exposure of humans, birds, animals, beneficial insects, and aquatic life to toxic herbicides in public places, roadways, and waterways. Such a measure was needed because of more and more evidence that cumulative exposure to toxic herbicides, including those containing glyphosate, is harmful to people as well as to land and water ecosystems. As might be expected, Will's proposed ordinance was fiercely resisted by public officials and industry supporters, who argued that giving up Roundup would be too expensive and was unnecessary. Will pulled the bill when she realized it appeared doomed, but she continued pushing for support and reintroduced it in 2016. Still, the bill failed to advance amid stiff opposition from industry representatives and public officials. Fighting the various measures turned into a multi-million dollar effort for Monsanto and other agrochemical industry players as they poured money into litigation and into lobbying lawmakers and the public. The industry spent approximately $8 million on just one campaign, trying to stop the Maui County GMO Moratorium Ballot Initiative, marking the highest amount ever expended on a Hawaii election issue. Throughout the state, the industry flexed its muscle with radio and television ads, television infomercials, mailers, and internet campaigns to oppose restrictions on its island activities. Industry-friendly scientists, such as Kevin Folta, also traveled to Hawaii to make presentations about the safety of the agrochemical industry activities. Kauai County Councilmember Hooser, who became somewhat of a legendary figure for fighting the agrochemical industry on his home island, began the quest simply as a response to concerns raised by constituents and never expected the issue to spiral into the drawn-out and highly charged battle it became. He was surprised when he first approached industry representatives to ask for data on pesticide usage, only to be rebuffed. And over time, he said, he witnessed tactics that he thought were unethical, such as chemical companies paying people to hold places in line outside council meetings so that industry representatives could fill public hearing rooms, or filling buses with employees to show up at council meetings to oppose the measure. He also said he was personally threatened and vilified by supporters of agrochemical interests. Some of the threats became so alarming that he reported them to local authorities, he said. At first, I just thought maybe we needed closer regulation, but after seeing these companies up close and personal, I want them gone. They are bad news, Hooser told me. They act like and say they are highly regulated, but they aren't. I've asked them repeatedly to tell me how much glyphosate they're using, and they refuse to do it. And they always say no one is going to be sick, but that is not true. I've come to realize there is very little accountability, and I'm concerned about my community. Hooser has lived on the islands since moving to Honolulu with his family in the 1970s as a high school student. He worked odd jobs, moved to South Africa briefly to pursue the woman who would become his wife, and then returned to the islands, where he settled on Kauai and ran first a video arcade and then a series of small businesses, including a local magazine. He described his decision to run for public office after he turned 40 as a midlife crisis, prompted in part by a desire to help support certain social issues, such as same-sex marriage. He served on the city council and then spent 8 years in the Hawaii State Senate before returning to the council, where he started hearing from constituents about pesticide companies. This was a wide cross-section of the community, not just environmentalists who were concerned about what was going on along the west side of Kauai, he said. The straw that broke the camel's back for me was when I found out there were about 150 residents suing DuPont Pioneer. This is unheard of, to sue the largest employer. The combined concern made me aware that I needed to do something, at least start asking questions. Hooser said he arranged meetings with Dow, BASF, DuPont, and Syngenta, but was unable to get straight answers about what types and amounts of pesticides were being used. They don't want anyone to tell them what to do, but the more they've fought and pushed and lied, the more committed I've become to fight them, said Hooser. There is no doubt in my mind that we are on the right side of history in this issue. In the spring of 2015, Hooser traveled to Basel, Switzerland, to address shareholders at Syngenta's annual meeting, held at the company's headquarters. He was allowed to address the shareholders and present them with a petition, asking them to compel Syngenta to honor the laws of our community. Another representative from Kauai who traveled with Hooser was able to video record the first few minutes of his speech before a security guard ordered her to stop. We are very, very concerned about our community and the impacts that Syngenta has in our small community, Hooser told the shareholders. But his plea was unsuccessful. Hooser and his wife raised 2 children on the island and became grandparents in the fall of 2016, giving Hooser added motivation to work for pesticide reductions. Hooser lost his seat on the county council in the November 2016 elections, but he has continued to work for what he calls a common quest to improve and protect the environment. This has been a life-changing experience for many people, he said. With the birth of my grandson, it really has made me think long and hard about this more than ever before. The issue to me actually is about corporate greed and what it is doing to the world. Another longtime Hawaii resident who is worried about the pesticides is lawyer Paul Achitoff. After graduating from Harvard University and then Columbia Law School, Achitoff spent 11 years practicing business and environmental litigation in Los Angeles and Honolulu, defending companies and individuals, including those who were breaking environmental laws and harming consumers. The work didn't sit well with his conscience, and Achitoff eventually switched sides, joining the nationwide nonprofit public interest law group Earth Justice in 1994. There, he built a career protecting endangered species, migratory birds, and the health of waterways. As managing attorney for Earth Justice's Mid-Pacific office in Honolulu, Achitoff became one of the key legal experts participating in the island's efforts to understand and address pesticide risks. Like others engaged in the fight, Achitoff sees a lack of government-collected data and a lack of interest in collecting that data as a real barrier to understanding. Neither the Department of Health nor the Department of Agriculture nor any other government agency has bothered to collect such data. And since none has committed to doing so in the future, we can expect that residents and workers will continue to at best worry and at worst get sick, while industry and government continue to pretend that there's nothing to worry about, he said. Some state lawmakers did try to push through a measure that would have required monthly disclosure of the types and amounts of pesticides being used and where they were being used across the state, somewhat similar to the action Kauai tried and failed to implement. California had had such requirements for more than two decades, and the data are plugged into a map so residents can see what types of pesticides are being sprayed near them. The data also help researchers to study whether there are correlations between types and amounts of chemicals being sprayed and reported health problems. Researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, were able to use the state-gathered data in a 2011 study that found exposure to a combination of paraquat and the fungicide Manab increased the risk of Parkinson's disease. A bill to set up a similar data collection program in Hawaii passed through the state Senate but stalled in the House after agricultural industry representatives argued that the reporting requirements would be overly burdensome on their businesses. Achitoff sees the lack of data collection as only one part of a much bigger problem. All the local efforts to rein in pesticide use have lost in court on the basis of assertions that it is up to state and federal governments, not localities, to oversee pesticide use. But the state has failed for years to provide such oversight, according to Achitoff. Government records obtained by Achitoff through the Freedom of Information Act show that the state has fallen far behind in its inspection and enforcement duties, failing to follow up on years of required examinations of possible pesticide use violations. The EPA noted as much in reviews of the Hawaii Department of Agriculture, HDOA, in 2013 and 2015, citing approximately 700 inspection files in need of review, some dating back to 2008. Achitoff filed a formal complaint with the EPA in August 2016 over the HTOA's lack of oversight, saying the state's lackadaisical approach to enforcement allows pesticide users to imagine that careless practices or even knowing violations have no consequences. The state's refusal to take seriously the effects of pesticides on health and the environment also have created a crisis of confidence, with Hawaii residents understandably convinced the foxes are guarding the henhouse, Achitoff told the EPA in his August 2016 complaint. In response, the EPA acknowledged the problems and said it would work to secure additional funding to provide near-term help for the HDOA, and it planned to keep a close eye on the state's progress in reducing its backlog and improving oversight. Achitoff also registered a formal complaint with the EPA and the U.S. Department of Justice, alleging that the lack of regulation by Hawaii authorities violated the civil rights of Native Hawaiians by causing adverse impacts on the people. He cited many examples to back his claim, including data showing that restrictions on pesticide discharges into a drainage ditch system on West Kauai were lifted in 2015, a move that translated into violations of the Clean Water Act. Millions of gallons of drainage waters containing toxic pollutants flow through the system and populated areas and into the nearshore ocean waters without any regulation or monitoring. Testing has shown the presence of harmful pesticides, including atrazine, chlorpyrifos, glyphosate, and metolachlor, in the drainage ditches in addition to many other pollutants. These unregulated and unmonitored discharges are of particular concern, since Native Hawaiians gather limu and fish in these areas. The open ditches are not fenced off or marked with warning signs to prevent children from playing in them. The outfalls funnel polluted waters into areas popular for fishing, surfing, swimming, and boating. It's all intensely frustrating for Achitoff, who believes corporate profits are taking precedence over people's lives. The genetic engineering companies have a very big role here, and they don't care about things like sustainability, the environment, or growing food for the people on the islands, he said. They think of farming in terms of inputs and outputs, and the bottom line. The corporations and the people of Hawaii are in for a long battle, according to Peter Adler, a consultant who specializes in mediation and conflict resolution. Adler helped lead the joint fact-finding group on Kauai and has stayed engaged in the debate. Advocates continue to push for more disclosure, more research, and more caution related to pesticide use. "This battle is not going to go away," he said. "This is a political storm. The winds are shifting around a bit, but it's not clear where the winds are going to blow next." Chapter 8. Angst in Argentina. American farmland has long been the largest market for genetically engineered seeds and the glyphosate herbicides used on them, but the United States is by no means the only country to have adopted the new technology with open arms. Farmers in Argentina started using genetically engineered seeds about the same time farmers in the United States did, after regulators in Argentina approved Monsanto Company's Roundup Ready soybeans in 1996. Soy production soared over the next decade as farmers who previously had been tending to grass-fed cattle, growing rice and potatoes, or running dairy farms shifted their focus to growing soybeans. Many farmers plowed up pastures to become part of what was billed as a biotech revolution. Because the beans tolerated direct sprays of glyphosate herbicide, controlling weeds was easier than ever, and, like the Americans, Argentine farmers quickly became eager buyers of both the specialty seeds and the glyphosate chemicals. The timing was perfect. Rising demand for protein, translation meat, was fueling strong global demand for soy needed to feed livestock that would end up on dinner plates around the world. Argentina soon became the world's third largest soybean supplier, and genetically modified soybeans became Argentina's most important export. Argentine farmers adopted biotech cotton and corn as well, with roughly 24 million acres of the nation's farmland planted with biotech seeds by 2014, most of which were designed to be sprayed with glyphosate. As in the United States, aggressive use of glyphosate year after year on farm fields led to a rise in glyphosate-resistant weeds, spurring many farmers to use more and more of the herbicide, often alongside other chemicals, to fight back. According to the data from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, total pesticide use in Argentina rose by 90% between 1997, when the country was beginning to adopt the new type of farming, and 2011, when it was well established. Use of herbicides, including glyphosate, rose by 185% during that time frame. And just as in the United States, concerns for human health and for the environment have emerged. By 2002, less than a decade after Roundup Ready soybeans were launched, some doctors in soybean-growing areas started reporting a suspicious rise in health problems in their patients, including birth defects and several types of cancer. People living in rural soybean-growing areas were notably affected, with sharp increased rates of miscarriage as well, according to scientists and physicians. In Santa Fe, cancer rates were documented at 2 to 4 times higher than the national average. In Chaco, regional birth reports showed a quadrupling of congenital defects from 19.1 per 10,000 to 85.3 per 10,000 in the decade after GMO crops and glyphosate took hold in Argentina. Doctors there found that more of the diseases and birth defects occurred in villages near the soy fields than near cattle ranches. A government study also noted troubling levels of agrochemical residues in the soil and drinking water in certain areas, with roughly 12 million people living in the country's farm belt potentially at risk. Worried parents started complaining to government officials about their children getting sick. They blamed the increased illness on intensive chemical use on GMO soybean fields and cornfields surrounding their towns and villages. As did the people of Hawaii, many Argentines sought tighter controls on how and where glyphosate and other agrochemicals were used, demanding that schools and neighborhoods be protected. Protesters, including doctors, parents, and scientists, argued that liberal spraying of pesticides near populated areas, particularly aerial spraying by planes, was clearly dangerous to people, both through the nearly invisible chemical drifts that traveled on breezes off the fields and through residues that lingered in water and soil. By 2006, the voices of protest were loud enough to convince a division of Argentina's agriculture ministry to recommend adding warning labels to glyphosate mixtures. The labels would have advised users to spray the chemicals only in farm areas, far away from homes and other well-populated areas. Agrochemical companies pushed back, and the ministry failed to fully implement the recommendation. Concerns persisted, and by 2009, President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner was motivated to set up a commission to study agrochemical impacts on human health. The commission found there was a need for more controls over herbicide mixing and use, and for more studies of formulations containing glyphosate. But both U.S. authorities and the agrochemical industry argued that glyphosate and the other chemicals used on the soy fields and corn fields were important for maximizing production and had been shown to be safe to use on the fields. Argentine authorities found themselves caught between the farming and chemical industry interests, who had profits to protect, and protesters, who claimed their very lives were at stake. For one small and mostly poor community in Argentina's central farming belt, a town called Ituzaingó, the concerns turned poignantly painful as children there began to fall ill with what seemed to be increasing frequency after the area adopted intensive production of GMO soy. One Ituzaingó woman, Sofia Gatica, felt driven to act after her newborn daughter died of kidney failure in 1999. Gatica, a working-class mother of three, had only a high school education, but she was convinced her daughter's death was tied to her own exposure while pregnant to the active spraying of agrochemicals on the soy fields that surrounded her community. Gatica began to knock on door after door around her town, talking with other mothers about their children and curious ailments. She learned that she was not alone in fearing the chemicals from the farm fields. Gatica and several other women eventually formed a group called the Mothers of Ituzaingó and filed multiple complaints with local leaders, protesting corporate influence in what the group called the poisoning of their town's population of 5,000 residents. The complaint from Gatica's group and others got the attention of regulators and helped spur studies that revealed residues of glyphosate and the insecticide endosulfan in and around people's homes in the Ituzaingó area. Both chemicals were commonly sprayed from the air onto area farm fields, a practice that many feared encouraged the pesticides' drift into the town. At that time, glyphosate was touted as safe, but endosulfan was considered especially toxic and dangerous to human health and the environment. By 2008, government officials were so concerned that the nation's Minister of Health began an investigation of the impact of the pesticide use in Ituzaingó. Research revealed that traces of herbicide and insecticide were detected in the blood of 80% of the children from the Ituzaingó area. Data also showed that cancer cases had jumped by 50% to 300 from 2001 to 2009. An incidence rate 41 times the national average. The evidence of harm was enough to lead authorities to pass a local prohibition on aerial spraying in Ituzaingó at a distance of 2,500 meters, a little more than a mile and a half, or less from residences. Gatica was honored as an environmental hero for her work and was named a 2012 recipient of the International Goldman Environmental Prize. In a videotaped interview conducted as part of the award program, Gatica explained why she was so motivated. "For me, these soybeans mean only destruction and death. When they spray the soy, they also spray us. At first, I didn't associate my daughter's illness with pesticide spray. I felt horrible. It was very hard on me." Eventually, she said, she realized her family was not alone. "What happened in Ituzaingó is a hidden genocide because they poison you slowly and silently." Gatica said she was warned against going after the pesticide industry, told to stop messing with the soy, and even threatened once at gunpoint, ordered to stop her anti-pesticide protests. Katika said many of her neighbors also were angry with her for her work, complaining their home values were diminished by the attention she drew to the area's health problems. Use of the insecticide endosulfan is now banned in Argentina and in many countries around the world, after representatives from 127 governments added it to a United Nations list of pollutants to be eliminated because of its ability to cause reproductive and developmental damage in both animals and humans. Use of glyphosate has continued, however. Katika has called for it to be banned as well and has continued her protest work. The efforts in Ituzaingó garnered international attention, but it is just one community among many around the country that are pushing back against agrochemicals. Some doctors are so concerned that they have formed a group called Doctors of Fumigated Towns to investigate and raise awareness of what they believe are clear connections between agricultural pesticide applications and a decline in health of people living near farm areas. When the group held its first meeting at the National University of Córdoba in August 2010, 160 doctors from 10 provinces and dozens of towns showed up to share stories of alarming health trends among their patients. It was at that meeting that the doctors began to grasp the potential magnitude of the problem, as one after another, they laid out evidence of curious birth defects, cancers, reproductive problems, and respiratory ailments. The group was founded and coordinated by Dr. Medardo Avila Vasquez, a pediatrician and neonatologist from the medical faculty of the National University of Córdoba. Avila Vasquez explained why he was driven to get involved. The change in how agriculture is produced has brought, frankly, a change in the profile of diseases. We've gone from a pretty healthy population to one with a high rate of cancer, birth defects, and illness seldom seen before. In its 2011 meeting, also held at the university in Córdoba, the group called on lawmakers to restrict pesticide use and prohibit aerial spraying. The group blamed the multinational laboratories for promoting a growing use of dangerous pesticides. In that meeting, the organization issued a formal declaration of what it said were certainties: that the effect on health in populations located in areas subjected to constant fumigation in Argentina is considerable, and that the situation is worsening day by day, with more frequent cases of severe diseases such as cancer, spontaneous abortions, fertility disorders, and births of children with congenital malformations; that different health conditions such as respiratory, endocrine, neurological, hematological, and psychological conditions are much more frequent in populations systematically sprayed as a result of the current agro-industrial model of production; that the use of pesticides is increasing every year; that as much as we would have wanted a different reality, the only truth is what we know today. The current agricultural production system is responsible for causing these health problems, as well as other serious ecological and sociological problems not mentioned here. By November 2015, the group had honed in on glyphosate as a key culprit in health problems after the International Agency for Research on Cancer's classification of the chemical's probable carcinogenicity. Glyphosate and other agrochemicals were contributing to increases in spontaneous abortions and congenital malformations, endocrine problems such as hypothyroidism, neurological disorders or cognitive development problems, and rising cancer rates, the group said. There is no doubt that the massive and growing exposure to pesticides modified the disease profile of Argentine rural populations, and that cancer is the leading cause of death among them, the organization said. About 500 miles from Córdoba, in Aviataray, a volunteer network of doctors, lawyers, and scientists also has been working to convince authorities to put tighter controls on pesticide spraying, particularly from the air. The town is rustic and lacks running water, which leaves residents to rely on rainwater or other sources that can be contaminated with pesticides. The paucity of clean water also makes it more challenging to wash food and clothing, which can be contaminated by the chemicals used on the nearby fields. Many children suffer from an array of ailments, including odd hairy moles and non-malignant tumors on their faces and bodies. The connections between agrochemicals and health problems in Argentina grabbed the global spotlight again in 2013 when the Associated Press, AP, published an investigation documenting the parallel phenomena of rising disease and rising use of agrochemicals in the country's farm belt. Overall, Argentine farmers were applying more than twice as much agrochemical concentrate per acre as U.S. farmers were, an AP analysis of government and pesticide industry data found. And the news outlet documented dozens of cases around the country where agrochemicals were being used or stored improperly, increasing the exposure risks. Those applying the chemicals were mixing glyphosate with chemicals such as 2,4-D, an herbicide associated with a defoliant called Agent Orange, used on jungles during the Vietnam War, according to the news investigation. Children were noted with a range of birth defects that included malformed brains, exposed spinal cords, blindness and deafness, other neurological damage, and strange skin problems. Government officials largely dismissed the issue, citing misinformation, and said citizens were simply dizzy and confused. Monsanto had a similar reaction, downplaying the health concerns and saying it could not be held responsible if people applying glyphosate or other chemicals failed to use proper safety precautions. Glyphosate is far less toxic than other types of pesticides that it has replaced, the company said. And, Monsanto said, Argentines should recognize that they have benefited greatly from the farming system Monsanto's products helped create, because grain output has more than tripled since 1990. But critics of the pesticide use say the documented health problems should not be ignored, and that applications of glyphosate, used at the high volumes seen in the past two decades, must be considered more carefully. They cite the research of Andres Carrasco, who found severe malformations from glyphosate in chicken and frog embryos significant enough to warrant further study. Carrasco's work, which was first reported in the local press in the spring of 2009 and then published in a scientific journal in August 2010, became a rallying cry for critics of Monsanto and its glyphosate-based Roundup Ready cropping system. Carrasco and a team of four other researchers said their work showed direct effects of glyphosate that open concerns about the clinical findings from human offspring in populations exposed to GBH, glyphosate-based herbicides, in agricultural fields. The findings in the lab are compatible with the malformations observed in the offspring of women chronically exposed to GBH during pregnancy, Carrasco argued. I suspect the toxicity classification of glyphosate is too low, he said. In some cases, this can be a powerful poison. Carrasco went to great lengths to publicize his team's findings, presenting his findings at a press conference held at the 6th European Conference of GMO-Free Regions of the European Parliament in Brussels. He also co-authored a critical report on the sustainability of GMO soy that challenged fundamental industry assertions about the benefits of the technology and called Monsanto's dealings in Argentina heavy-handed attempts to dominate global seed and glyphosate supplies. That September 2010 report included a litany of warnings. The industry claims that glyphosate is safe for people and breaks down rapidly and harmlessly in the environment. But a large and growing body of scientific research challenges these claims, revealing serious health and environmental impacts. The adjuvants, added ingredients, in Roundup increase its toxicity. Harmful effects from glyphosate and Roundup are seen at lower levels than those used in agricultural spraying, corresponding to levels found in the environment. The cultivation of GMRR soy endangers human and animal health, increases herbicide use, damages the environment, reduces biodiversity, and has negative impacts on rural populations. The monopolistic control by agribusiness companies over GMRR soy technology and production endangers markets, compromises the economic viability of farming, and threatens food security. Not surprisingly, Monsanto challenged Carrasco's assertions and the credibility of his research. The company said his methodology was flawed and used unrealistic exposure scenarios.